I'm going to begin this morning, begin the sermon with a bang. My usual style of preaching is not punctuated with shouting or pyrotechnics, so I've enlisted the help of a sizable orchestra and choir to lend me a hand. Have a listen. I couldn't do that. Tell me, what feelings did that music arouse in you?
Exuberance.
Suspense. Power.
Joy.
So, okay, anticipation, building up to something. Majesty. Sounds spooky to any of you? You may recognize this tune because it's been used in probably about a dozen movies. Now, what picture? Did any pictures come to your mind as you're listening to that song? I see two armies facing one another
ready to go out into this great plain for battle. Any other pictures come to your mind?
Okay,
ships. Pirate ships would be good with that one. Just one ship, okay. Okay. Tragedy. That could be it. And, you know, if we listen to that again with a sense of what we see, I'm sure we could come up with things. And you're all spot on. There's no wrong answer to that. Maybe it felt to some of you ominous or tense or foreboding. Now, those of you who are musically inclined may know the name of that stirring piece of music. It's called O Fortuna. If your kids were in high school band, they may have played this. It's the first piece of a symphony called Carmina Burana. And if you ever have a chance to hear that, please do it. Now, I don't expect you to have understood the lyrics because they're in Latin. They are from a medieval Latin poem that was written sometime during the 12th century. And the song is about the role that fortune and luck play in our lives, or that rule in our lives. And in the poem, in the lives of Roman and Greek gods in that mythology. Now, here's the translation. O fortune, like the moon, you are unchangeable, always changeable, always waxing and waning. Hateful life first oppresses, and then it soothes as fancy takes it. Poverty and power, it melts like ice. Fate in health and in virtue is against me. Driven on and weighed down, always enslaved. So at this hour, without delay, pluck the vibrating string. Since fate strikes down the strong man, everyone weep with me. And all God's people said, yeah, maybe not quite. Okay, now that you've had your dose of culture and fine arts, I want you to think with me about fate and fortune and faith. And I want to begin by thinking about this wonderful word that the Ariel would have loved, fortuitous. Now, we have all had fortuitous moments in our lives, those unexpected, unsolicited, unforeseen, out of the blue experiences that have impacted us. Most often when we hear that something was a fortuitous event, it means fortunate, it's good, it's positive. We sometimes call it good luck, but a fortuitous event can always also be unfortunate. When accidents happen, when our long-designed plans blow up in our face, we struggle to understand it, as you sang in that hymn. All the verses, all the things we do not know, but have to have faith that one day, in God's way, we will see it by and by. You know, life happens, and it can cut either way. A stroke of good luck may have a bad result. And something bad that happens to us can lead to something good that we could never, ever have predicted. Decisions which seem very insignificant at the time can be fodder for God's larger purposes. And this is where this story of the minor Old Testament prophet Habakkuk, or if you prefer, Habakkuk, comes in. How'd you like to be a kid having your mother call at the back, Habakkuk, come on! Habakkuk prophesied during the 7th century BC, when the Babylonian Empire was at its zenith. Babylon had just conquered Egypt and now it had its crosshairs on Judah. And it was Habakkuk's job to warn his people of the impending disaster. Now the text begins with a complaint. Right off the bat, Habakkuk is complaining to God. How long shall I cry for help and you will not listen to me? Why do you make me see everything that's wrong? I see nothing but conflict and violence and destruction everywhere I look. Your people have ignored you. The poor are oppressed. The rich are getting richer. Judah is coming apart at the seams. And I don't know about you, but this complaint of Habakkuk has a very, very familiar ring to it. He said, I've prayed and prayed, and what do I have to show for it? Everything is a mess. Speak up, God, if you will. I'm all ears. And God hears Habakkuk's complaint in chapter 2. But Habakkuk does not like what he is told. Judgment was coming, something which Habakkuk prophesied, but he could not imagine how, because God's arm of judgment was going to come to Judah through the strong arm of Babylon. What a fortuitous event in the unfortunate way. Your enemy is going to be used by God to put you in your place. Now, we're talking about Babylonians here. The Babylonians made ISIS look like Girl Scouts. And Habakkuk's complaint grew shrill when he heard these words of God. Why are you silent when the wicked swallow those who are more righteous than they? And God said, this is a vision for an appointed time. My justice is going to be done, but you're going to have to wait for it. How long does it matter? Because, you see, the world runs according to my time, not yours. And so Habakkuk had to keep on in faith that God would keep his promises and that God would settle accounts. And like Habakkuk, we try standing on the promises. And faith means that we keep on despite the absence of answers and our how long questions. But we can only do it for the long haul if we trust in God. See, the Babylonian invasion was fortuitous to Habakkuk in the worst kind of way. His people would have to be in exile for several generations, almost 300 years away from their homeland, which had been leveled to ruins. And so what were they going to do during that very unfortunate time? What good could possibly come out of it? Well, one thing is they discovered that they could preserve and practice their faith any place they were. They could practice it in their homeland. They could practice it in exile. They could practice it no matter the circumstances that impinged upon them. They knew they would survive. And it was also during this time that something else happened, something that we would call good, because it was during this 300-year period that several of the books of the Old Testament were written. Maybe that would not have happened if Judah had not been exiled. Do you ever get the feeling that we're on the wrong side of history? That we wish maybe we would have lived at another time, or wish somehow that we could get just a little peek of what's beyond the horizon to see what it looks like when God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. But the question is, can we hope for it? And can we stand on that promise even if it doesn't come in our lifetime? Or our children's lifetime, or our great-great-grandchildren's lifetimes. See, in the meanwhile, we need to have faith to see us through and help us endure the elections and sustain us as we long for and hopefully work for an outbreak of sanity in the world, lest we render this earth uninhabitable. As God's people, we hold on to our faith in this waiting mode. Who knows how long? But waiting does not mean lazy boy waiting. As Parker Palmer said, it is active waiting, to do as Jesus told us to do, to learn from him, to live like him, to love like him. If I mentioned Romans 8:28, hopefully somebody would know what that text is. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God and who are called according to his purposes. We know that all things work together for good. That doesn't mean that all the things that happen to us are good. It doesn't mean that loving God protects us from the slings and the arrows. You know, my grandfather often say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And there's some truth there, but there's more to it. All things work together for good, and we are strong as long as we love God. So this brings me to a question. Maybe you could consider it a riddle. And that is, what does airplane fuel, Waylon Jennings, and hot sauce have in common? I want you to think about that as I tell you the story of Kelly O'Hara. Kelly made a huge mistake involving one little word. It was in September of 1941 during World War II. He was an assistant to a quartermaster on the island of Manila, and he was told to order 18,055-gallon empty drums that would be used for tactical maneuvers. And prompt as he always was, he filled out the requisition and sent it off minus one very important little word: empty. And 6 weeks later, he was in one ton of trouble as 6 million gallons of fuel arrived at port, unwanted and unneeded fuel, because the Philippines had all of the fuel they could use. And you can imagine what happened to poor Kelly O'Hara. He was severely reprimanded, he was demoted, and then ordered to find a place to put 1 million gallons of fuel. And so he found the most out-of-the-way place he could. It was on a peninsula called Bataan. Now fast forward 5 months. Kelly is called into the command office of General Douglas MacArthur. MacArthur would be gone within 24 hours, leaving Kelly and all of his fellow soldiers to surrender to the Japanese. Nice guy, huh? But before MacArthur left, he told this young recruit who was standing at attention before him, he said, "I understand you were severely reprimanded for ordering all of that fuel. I don't care much for mistakes, but I want to thank you for what you did, because without that fuel, we would have had to have surrendered months ago. God bless you and thank you." That's the airplane fuel. Now that I'm 65, excuse me, that's Social Security time. Now that I'm 63, I've learned to appreciate things that I did not like in my youth. Asparagus is one of them. And the other is country music. I ridiculed country music as I was growing up, but I'm starting to like it, really, for the first time in my life. And by country music, I don't mean that contemporary crap that is just watered-down rock with country lyrics put over the top. I'm talking about the vintage stuff that my father loved to listen to. Marty Robbins and Farron Young and Tammy Wynette. And hello, I'm Johnny Cash. But another artist of that time, which I grew to appreciate, was Waylon Jennings. Let me take you back 84 years to when Waylon played lead guitar for a guy named J.P. Richardson. Some of you may remember that he was called the Big Bopper. They had just finished a gig along with Buddy Holly and Richie Valens. The next performance was in Fargo, North Dakota, and most of the band had already boarded above on that bus for that long ride on a very icy and blustery winter night. And Waylon heard JP calling to him, "Waylon, won't you come with Buddy and with Richie? We're on a plane. It'll be a lot easier than riding on that stinking bus all night." And Waylon thought about it for a moment. And he said, "Nah." He said, "I think I'm going to ride the bus." And you know, he made the most fortuitous decision of his entire life. Because 20 minutes later, the plane went down. There were no survivors, but Waylon lived, and Waylon played music, and Waylon became a star, and Waylon embedded songs into our heads that we may take with us until our dying day. You know, sometimes simple decisions have great, great consequences. You've probably never heard of Bruce McElhenney. He owned a beautiful little sugar plantation on Avery Island off the Louisiana coast. The year was 1863. The Civil War was raging. And he was told that Union soldiers were coming to invade the island, so Bruce McElhenney fled. And as he did, he offered a prayer to God that there would be enough of the plantation left after the war was over so that it would sustain his family. 2 years later, he returned and was devastated. All the trees were destroyed. His lovely home and the adjacent buildings had been burned to the ground. The sugar crop was gone. And Bruce McElhenney fell to the ground and he wept and he wept. But then he remembered that prayer to God that he would show him something that would sustain he and his family. All had been destroyed, but his faith that God would supply his need was very strong. And McElhenney was walking through an old garden the next day, and he spotted a little clump of Mexican peppers. And he held that clump up and he said to his friends who were with him, he said, "This is an answer to my prayer." And they laughed at him. "Oh yeah, sure." And then he started to brew those peppers with salt and sugar. And he poured them into these little perfume bottles that he found strewn among the trash heaps that had been left by the Union soldiers. They laughed at him some more. But they stopped laughing when that pepper concoction made Bruce McElhenney a millionaire. You know, there's always a bottle of this stuff in our refrigerator. My son eats it on almost everything. And I want you to think about McElhenney's despair and his prayer the next time you pick up a bottle of Tabasco sauce. Because God honored his prayer and gave him the insight to help him see a way where before he saw no way at all. Kelly and Waylon and Bruce, discovered a purpose that was embedded in the crazy twists and turns of life. See, not every cloud has a silver lining. And not every defeat is a disaster. Fortuitous moments, you see, in our lives are defining moments. But for people whose confidence is God, the current chapter is not the end of the story. Go back and reread the story of Joseph. It begins in Genesis 37. His brothers couldn't stand him, so they plotted to kill him. When he was 17 years old, they threw him in a pit. And Reuben told him, "Ah, let's not kill him, let's pull him out." And so they sold him into slavery. And he went and was taken to Egypt, where he spent the next decades. And many years later, Joseph had become the most powerful man in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And there was a long and terrible and widespread famine in that region of the world that drove Joseph's brothers to Egypt searching for food. And when they were reunited, they didn't recognize him, but he knew them. And as he told them who he was, he began to weep. And they were scared to death because they knew they were goners. But to their amazement, Joseph said these words, "Even though you intended to harm me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve many people, as he is doing today. Even though you intended to kill me, my own brothers, God intended it for good." So in case you haven't heard the bad news, nothing lasts forever. But I want to leave you with the good news as well. Nothing lasts forever.